Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Negler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. It is Friday. We made it, people. We're at the end of the week. March Madness rages on. Great weekend stretching out before us. And right before we went live, huge breaking Packers news in Kadeem Telfort re-signing as an exclusive rights free agent. So I know you were all waiting with bated breath to see if Telfort will be back. And yes, he is indeed back in the fold with the Packers per the NFL transaction wire. Obviously, outside of that, there is no Packers news. Not surprising. There are a few former Packers making some news, either the likes of Caleb Jones being released by the Patriots or former Packers lineman Royce Newman signing a new contract. Other than, you know, the erstwhile former Packers signing elsewhere or being released, not a whole lot of Packers news going on this Friday. But I did want to talk a little bit about Matt LaFleur and his role here when it comes to the improvements they need to see on the offensive side of the ball in 2025. And look, we've talked a lot already this offseason about what this offense needs regarding the perimeter receiver in particular, hopefully one with some speed and an ability to get downfield and quote-unquote take the top off the defense. But look, there is every possibility that they end up coming out of this offseason without that particular skill set at the wide receiver position. Now, I do think they will add another wide receiver there. I know they've added Mecole Hardman, who, yes, has all the speed in the world, but I definitely see him more as a horizontal threat, if you will, rather than a vertical one. Yes, they will use him vertically at times, no question about it. Probably use him in some clear out route capacity, but I also think there's a very good chance that he is, you know, Tyler Irvin-esque, so to speak, doing a lot of the things we used to see Irvin do back in 2020, and a component of Matt's offense that hasn't really been that prevalent since then. We've had a couple of different guys in and out the door that have maybe somewhat replicated that. Of course, they've utilized Jaden Reed at times in that capacity, but really that particular player hasn't really been a focus or a feature. And I'm not here to say, well, they're obviously with the signing of Hardman going back to that, but I do think there are some things they can utilize there that have been absent as far as not just the eye candy component, but getting the ball in space out in the flat or even maybe a bit upfield to a guy with electric speed and then utilizing that threat to maybe, you know, cause a little bit of hesitation from the linebackers, from the safeties, and utilizing that to try and take advantage of that. Something we saw them do to great effect back in 2020 when Rodgers won his third MVP. And I do think that kind of component should help Jordan Love out a little bit, as well as the offense in general. Now, it's not as simple as just add motion guy and go to town, obviously, because if it was, they'd be doing that. But I do think that is a component that can be added to the mix that was certainly not prevalent these last couple of years, and certainly not last year when things really got bogged down on the offensive side of the ball. Because I think the big thing that they got to be working towards this offseason clearly is unlocking the passing game as it works off of or a complement to the running game. Because, you know, as they go along here, seems pretty clear they are pretty damn intent on running the football. And the Banks signing obviously would lead one to believe that, yeah, they're going to continue to pound the rock. But I am interested to see if they mix in a little bit or get back to mixing in a little bit more of the zone stuff that was so prevalent when Aaron Jones was in town. I think Josh Jacobs certainly is more than capable of running that style of rushing attacks. And I do think it would help Jordan Love. We saw how well he utilized kind of the boot action off of, you know, what looked like could be a run, could be a pass. Those linebackers are biting, but now you've got space behind them. And Jordan took advantage of that in 2023 in a way that you really didn't see a whole lot of in 2024. Now, I know his injury is probably playing a role there, no doubt about it. But I do wonder how much, you know, regardless of who they might add in the draft, how much of this offseason Matt LaFleur, Adam Stenovich and company are looking at ways to make sure that they can utilize all these guys and all this young potential that's still on the team, all the guys that we were raving about coming off of 2023 and who so many are down on now coming off of 2024, there is still a ton of young potential and talent there. And it is incumbent upon LaFleur to unlock it. And for whatever kind of myriad of reasons, that certainly didn't happen down the stretch last year. And it was a continuing problem that I think that's what this whole offseason is going to be about, is making sure that they have answers there and ways to unlock that potential that really eluded them in 2024. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. Certainly without that element, without a Watson type receiver on the outside, it gets tougher. We've seen that throughout LaFleur's tenure, whether it was when MVS was still in town or now with Watson going down. When either one of those guys were subtracted from the offense, you've seen how labored it seems to get at times. And that's on LaFleur to unlock and figure that out, because you can't be beholden to one player. If he's injured, then the whole offense bogs down. That has got to be able to have way more kind of solutions on offer, especially for the quarterback. But like I said, I have little doubt that's what he's in the lab, and along with his offensive assistants, working on this offseason. And I'm really excited to see, you know, despite, again, whatever gets added in the draft, what avenue they go down to try and help their young quarterback, and particularly all these young playmakers who, again, still have all the potential in the world. That's what I'm thinking about today. Let's see what you guys are thinking about today. Good to see everybody. Benarak, how are you? Dennis is here saying hello to everybody. How are you, Dennis? Jim, how are you, buddy? Rob Kress, what an interesting proposal. How about a Thanksgiving bye week? I'm down with it. If you're talking about for the Packers, if you're talking about for the NFL, that's never going to happen. But yes, I am fine not playing on Thanksgiving, if that's what you're saying. I am very much like Vince Lombardi in that regard. Keep my Packers off Thanksgiving. Even Thanksgiving night, that's probably better than Thanksgiving Day, but the better or the less Thanksgiving game, the better. Jeff Smith, how are you, man? Jessica Chastain here. Why does second-round pick get treated like firstborn? In my opinion, Hendrickson would be getting a firstborn for a cousin, Calais Campbell. Jeff, you're going to keep beating these things into the ground. They're not going to happen, and you're just going to get disappointed. My friend, my buddy, I'm begging you. You're going to have to come to grips with it. And I know you're probably going to be like in that mindset all offseason, which I understand, but try not to let you get your heart broke here, buddy. Don't worry. And as far as second rounders, they're not treated like firstborn, but they are premium picks. And there is a financial component that goes along with potentially sending a second rounder to a team for a player that you are then going to have to sign to a monster contract. And I understand the reasons for it. I'm just saying. There's reason for reticence that I understand. Messiano is here. How are you, buddy? Good to see you. Chuck Olson, how are you, man? Dale Norton, good afternoon. Heebs, I can't tell if this is sarcasm or not. I love what Goody has done so far this offseason. A kicker, cornerback, offensive lineman, and wide receiver. I mean, when you put it like that. Now, I do think you're being genuine, and I'm in agreement with you. But I also understand that that was probably not what people were thinking if you had told them, hey, if they're going to sign all this, obviously the kicker would have been McManus. We all would have figured that, but the rest of it probably would have been varying mileage, right? But I'm with you. I think, you know, he's done a good job of shepherding the roster, so to speak, into whatever this next iteration is going to be, because to me, that's what 2025 is all about. It's shedding that youngest team in the league label and hopefully maturing and moving on from some of the mistakes and miscues that we saw throughout last season to a team that's played a lot of ball together and becomes a bit more of a fighting unit, especially at home against division opponents. Joe, how are you, man? Do they have to fundamentally redesign the passing game if they are not going back to being primarily an outside zone running team? Joe, that is the billion-dollar question. I don't know if fundamentally, but they certainly have to figure out a way to utilize their passing concepts when they're running the stuff they like to run for Jacobs. You know, we saw them, and what's so interesting is, you know, when Malik Willis was the quarterback for those 2 weeks early in the season, you heard a lot about, oh, we'll run the Malik Willis stuff with Jordan Love. they sprinkled some in throughout the year, especially the spinner stuff from the gun that you saw. But it was pretty clear that they were, you know, reticent to have Jordan Love pushing out from under center because of the knee, because he didn't run nearly as much under center stuff as Malik did. But you also saw with Malik, not all of them, but especially early days, a lot of those concepts were pretty simplified reads, right? And then as the season went on, you know, we saw Willis come back in later in the season against Jacksonville, against the Bears at the end. It looked like they ran a little bit more of an open kind of playbook, so to speak. But I do wonder how much of that could be played into what they want to do off the power running game. Because it certainly looked at times that the timing was off between what Jordan Love was doing and seeing and then where the receivers were breaking. There were so many times where you saw the ball thrown in front of the receiver's feet, but it was really hard to know if that's just Jordan missing badly, like a yard in front of his receiver, or is that a receiver breaking later than the quarterback expected him to. You know, all these things add up. So, and it's not to dismiss some poor throws from Love. There certainly were plenty of them, but it just felt so disjointed in a way it never was in 2023 that I do think there's something to your question. Like, is that, and that's probably some of the stuff that, you know, they're all talking about there at 1265 Lombardi this offseason regarding the offense and what they need to do to make it complement what they're doing with Jacobs more than maybe try and fit it the other way around. Ed, how are you, man? Any scouts that the Packers are famous in the Packer world? Not quite sure what you're saying there or asking there, Ed. If you're talking about all time, like historically, Jack Vinisi is a scout back when Lombardi was in town that who should probably be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He brought in so many guys who ended up as Hall of Famers under Lombardi that were kind of wasting away before Lombardi arrived. Vinisi was a scout before there really was scouting in the NFL. And he was a real pioneer. So you're talking about in the Packers world, famous scouts. Vinisi's probably the biggest. Craig, how are you, man? I missed the Hardman discussion yesterday. Is he just a body or a vet or a kick return specialist or a bit of all? Mostly a return specialist, I would say, but I do think they'll utilize him on the offensive side of the ball. I think they can utilize him, you know, as a speed merchant a bit on the outside to clear things out. I don't think they're going to build the passing game around him or anything. I don't think he's going to be, you know, targeted 10 times a game, especially deep downfield. But I do think they can utilize him in some of the kind of horizontal aspects. But mostly, he is a major upgrade in the return game. And that's on both kickoffs and punt returns. And that's not to throw any shade at Keyshawn Nixon, who clearly has the All-Pro awards to his name. But there's no doubt that he is, especially on punt returns, a significant upgrade. And I do think that is a major reason why he's in Green Bay. BC, how are you, man? Is there a feeling that because the draft is in Green Bay, the Packers might trade up in the draft and make a splash, or are we just business as usual? Oh, they are business as usual. If they do that, it's not because they're in Green Bay. It's because they love the player. I guarantee you that. As Brian kind of joked with us at the combine, he's not going to be on the stage, you know? So if Packers fans hate the pick, they can boo whoever's up there, most likely Goodell, and he doesn't have to deal with it, right? And I think it was Tom Silverstein joked, like, just don't go into the atrium like Ted did. But I said, and my counter was, well, you should. And that will, you know, that's how legends are born. So, yeah, I don't think in any way, and oftentimes this question gets asked like, oh, will they not trade their first round pick because the draft is in Green Bay and blah, blah, blah. The location of the draft is very immaterial to the personnel group. The biggest kind of effect it's going to have on them is getting in and out of the building every day because it's going to be an absolute zoo. But outside of that, they could be drafting on the moon. And, it, you know, the guys in the personnel group could be on the moon for all they care. It's just, it does not material affect their process at all. Klaus, how are you, man? It's always a puzzle to mix and match the parts of a team, especially with people getting hurt, other teams getting more film on us and rules changes and so on. I hope we can make a deep run. Klaus, that's a very healthy perspective. And you're right. Now, the thing is, of course, every other team is dealing with that kind of thing, right? And it is a big component of who is successful down the stretch is how they manage those things. And Brian did kind of allude to that in his postseason presser, but you're absolutely spot on. You know, that is a component for a winning organization and a winning program is how they juggle those very things. And yeah, here's hoping, man. I'm down with it. Brandy, how are you? Every iteration of this offense is generally run pretty well. Think of the evolution from the McCarthy days. I mean, it's night and day, right? Especially towards the end where McCarthy was just, you know, futilely trying to run his stuff and Rodgers was, and he were butting heads all the time. I mean, it is interesting, though, how, you know, there was that kind of first year under LaFleur with Rodgers where it was very kind of herky-jerky. It was very inconsistent. You know, there were moments and there were fleeting signs that they had something, but they never really got it going. And even despite that, they still went to the NFC Championship game, right? But then in 2020 is when they really took off. And it was very smooth and very productive. And then 2021, it kind of falls off again, though Rodgers is still an MVP and they are still moving the ball and scoring points. And then 2022 really kind of, not going to say falls back down to earth, but it was back to the 2019 level of lots of struggle. Nothing really comes easy. Then 2023, a brand new quarterback. It was like all of that in one season because you had the first half of the season where it was everything was a problem. Nobody could get out of anybody's way, and it was always hard. To the second half of the season where they were the most explosive, efficient, best offense in the league. And that's just metrics, right? They were excellent. Running the ball, passing the ball, everything. They could do it all. So I think coming off of that, so many people expected, maybe not, okay, they're just going to hit the ground running in 2024, but you certainly thought you'd see an extension of that. But Josh Jacobs arrives. The approach certainly seemed to change a little bit on offense. And the passing game, I think, suffered a little bit because of it. So that's why I'm kind of excited. You know, you look at that kind of brief history there, it sure feels like LaFleur has a good handle on, okay, I know that this is not working. I've got to spend this offseason drilling down on areas that I can make it a lot more efficient, a lot more fluid. And that's why I'm really excited for this upcoming season on the offensive side. Matthew, how are you, man? Any thoughts on the three teams' rule changes proposed? Nothing major, Matthew. I think the Packers proposal, which everyone talks about, is the ban of the tush push. You know, that is the Packers essentially somewhat taking a bullet for the league. There were a lot of folks around the NFL that wanted this proposal put in front of the ownership. Packers, you know, did a solid and did it and called it in, so to speak. The Lions proposal about defensive holding downfield shouldn't be an automatic first down. I'm 100% for that. I don't think it's ever going to pass. And this is year 2025. It's all about offense. They want to give offenses every advantage. And I hear people who say, well, you know, if a defensive back is beat, he'll just tackle a guy downfield, take the penalty, and then, you know, they won't have a first down. They'll have the 5 yards and they'll get essentially a free pass. There's some validity to that. No question about it. But I also know that that was football for like 60 years. Before the league liberalized passing rules came into effect, that was how football was played. And I got kind of no problem with that. You know, if you can beat a guy and get off the line of scrimmage and he can't tackle you because you beat him so bad, you should win that. You know, even if a guy is able to grab your arm or something like that. But it certainly shouldn't be a automatic first down. Like it's third and 25 and there's a defensive back just jumping at the ball. He has every right to do it. And he, like say brushes against a guy or he just accidentally grabs onto his shoulder pad or whatever little minute infraction happens. And then the offense is awarded with an automatic first down. That's absurd to me. And I fucking hate it with the fire of a thousand suns. And then the rest of what I think a lot of it, the rest of it was playoff positioning and seeding and things like that. And I'm fine either way. I'm a traditionalist, so I think if you win, you want, you know, to get guarantee yourself a home game, win your division. And I know, like, look, the Vikings had to go on the road this year because they won 14 games and didn't win their division, and they can grouse about that, right? But I'm fine with it. I mean, for all the good it does, Lions, number one seed, got the week of rest, got that home game, one and done. So, I mean, it's going to be whatever it's going to be. I don't really feel that strongly about it. I know some people get bent out of shape about, well, if you win all these games and it's more than some other team won their division with, well, you should get the home and not them, etc. I don't care, man. You still got to lace it up. You still got to play ball. Like I said, I'm a traditionalist, so I'm always going to kind of fall on that side of things. But for the most part, I don't really care. BC, what's up? McMillan, or we riot? Just kidding. Yes, the news of the day on the draft front, Brian Gutekunst, the only general manager at the private workout. I mean, I suspect he's mostly just doing his due diligence, but very interesting. Though I do know, man, especially going back to Ted Thompson's days, they'll fly anywhere and everywhere to make like people think one thing and actually be doing or working on something else, you know? So it's a lot of smoke this time of year, but noteworthy nonetheless, no question. Craig, this is such an interesting question. If the Packers gave you the ability to choose who announces the first round pick, who would you choose and why? I would 1,000,000,000% choose Corey Banky because he's the most diehard Packers fan I know, and it would be incredible. But I don't think that's going to happen. Charlie, how are you? Thanks for the super chat, man. What's the over-under on Packers wearing the white lids in 2025? I say 1.5. Charlie, I'll give it a under. I think they'll do it once. I know they did it twice last year. I think we'll get them one time this year, but I do think we'll get them. Jeff, thanks, man. Thrilled with Hardman. Probably got him for a song and got a returner. No, we'll never get my superstar D lineman. Acceptance is a stepping grief. What's for dinner? Pizza with the girls here at Shane Agler in about an hour. I'm very excited. M, how are you, man? Good to see you. Hi, Nags. What's your take on adjusting the playoff seating according to the Lions proposal? In my opinion, it would be fair to let the team with a better record play at home. See? And to that, I respond as an addendum to everything I just said earlier. Who said life is fair? Why are we so obsessed with fairness? Like, sometimes I just think, look, man, win your division. There you go. And tool your team so that it is matching up well against your division. Again, I'm a traditionalist, but also, again, I don't really care. Like, sure, if it goes that way, so be it. I'm fine with it. Chad, how are you, man? Thanks for the super chat. With the Hardman signing and likely at least one receiver in the draft, who do you think the odd man out will be? My guess is Melton. Chad, that is going to be a fascinating development to watch throughout training camp. Now, you know, we used to joke with Ted all the time, like sometimes injuries just work it out on their own, right? Now, you never wish for that. You're not hoping for it, clearly, but tends to happen. More often than not, you get to camp, someone does get banged up, and it kind of clears up your rotation automatically, right? But if everyone stays healthy, you got to think, yeah, between Melton and Malik Heath, that's where the battle will probably be, you would suspect. And look, there's no guarantee that Hardman makes the team, especially with the one-year deal. You got to suspect it's not a significant cap hit. Yeah, I think they're all obviously fighting for a gig. And who knows, maybe you get to training camp and they all ball out and they dangle one or two of those guys in, you know, a possible trade scenario. I'm not saying it's likely, but you can't rule it out. But yeah, I would suspect that's where the battle will be between Melton and Heath. But man, crazier shit has happened. We shall see. All right, buddy, I'm going to have to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great weekend. Go Pack, go.